For many of us, life is hectic and it's tough to schedule time for the gym. To get the biggest bang for your buck, it's actually helpful to know the difference between traditional strength training and functional training so you can make the best decision for your needs and for your particular goals. If you're not sure what that means, which a lot of people probably don't, we're going to bring in health contributor, life coach, and personal trainer, Jake Laspinato. He is here to explain the fundamental differences. Hey, Jake, how are you doing today?
Hey, Corey, I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, so many people have an idea of what traditional training is, but is there really such a thing?
You know, that's a really good question, and I feel like what comes up for me is the idea of like a traditional bodybuilding training is usually what I hear most people who are just starting out in the gym are doing some form of program like that, where it's the traditional like chest and triceps, back and biceps, legs and shoulders. I wouldn't say that's necessarily definition of traditional training, but that is kind of like the basics of, I feel, how people would approach like a traditional training style.
Okay, so let's start with functional training. Is this more or less like a total body approach to getting fit?
Yeah, so another really good question. So when we think of functional training, what I like to explain to my clients and to people is we're talking more about like human performance. So functional exercises are exercises that are going to somewhat mimic like what we are doing on a daily basis, as far as, you know, sitting up and down from a chair would be like a squatting motion, reaching up overhead to grab something is a vertical pressing motion. So
that's actually a very good way to explain it.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, this term gets thrown around a lot. It's like, oh, functional training, but that's really, it's mimicking these movements that we do regularly, but at the same time, we're actually strengthening the body. We're putting more of a focus, a dynamic focus on the core and what could be considered the trunk section. So like glutes, hamstrings, low back, abdominal wall, and kind of hitting all of that in with the different movement patterns.
Now, is there an easy way to track your progress doing functional training? Where you begin and where you want to go? Can you track this?
Yeah, definitely. So like another good example, right, would be like functional movements could be like barbell squatting, barbell deadlifting, lunging, bench pressing, shoulder pressing, doing pull-ups, doing a barbell row. So these movements, which would be considered compound movements, anything with the barbell really is considered compound, because you're not just hitting one muscle group. You're actually hitting like a whole general vicinity of the muscular system and nervous system when you're doing those movement patterns. So, general just strength progress, you know, gauging the strength gains of the movement pattern. So if you're getting stronger, you know, okay, I'm getting stronger. So that means, you know, I'm able to perform these movements better and so on and so forth.
Okay. So, I mean, like functional training, I would say is like meant to improve everyday life. Now, to change over to go to like machine or circuit training is just a little bit different. You know, if you're a first time gym goer and you walk in and you see these rows and rows and rows of like these machines, it might be a little bit intimidating. So what is the different type of training for this? Is this more individual muscles?
Yeah, for sure. So when you're that, and that's the big difference between the functional, like I mentioned with the compound movements, it's like you're using more than one muscle group. So let's take, for example, like the barbell deadlift. Yes, you're going to be working glutes and hamstrings. You're also going to be working really the entire posterior chain. So that's posterior chain, the backside of the body. So we're talking the traps, the lats, the low back, so the erector muscles. You're working dynamically, working the core and the stabilizer muscles through the core. And so you're working big muscles and small muscles, whereas, you know, you flip that and you go to a machine and you do, let's say, like a hamstring curl, or even like the leg press could be a good example as well. Whereas when we're seated, anytime we're seated doing an exercise, unless we're like consciously and actively engaging our core, the core is going to kind of be shut down and we're more isolating. So it's like on a leg press, yeah, we're hitting our quads and hamstrings and glutes, but we're not getting.
So it's more like a muscle builder versus a life function sort of movement in training.
Exactly. Yeah. So like that's where like, you know, a lot of times you'll see a lot of bodybuilders or people who are really trying to sculpt and really, you know, focus and isolate the different muscle groups because they're working on getting that response, which is called hypertrophy, which is basically like the tearing of the muscle fibers to the point where they're having to be repaired. So you're working in like the 8 to 12 rep range and focusing on isolating those movements opposed to, you know, being a little bit more functional. And I think another like really good example would be is like a lot of gyms have like ab crunch machines where you're like really like isolating the rectus abdominis, which is also known as like the six pack muscle. So the six pack muscles, you're really, really focused on isolating that. Whereas you can take a more functional movement like a cable lateral chop where you're actually focusing on rotation. And if you're properly engaging your core, you're also dynamically working the internal, external obliques. You're also getting the six pack working and it's a little less of that isolation. So, yeah.
Well, before we get to some listener questions, these machine exercises, I would have to say it's good for is it good for beginners who are just walking in and don't really know exactly what to do or what their goal is? They're trying to figure that out.
Yeah, for sure. And that's such a good question because, you know, the big thing is they can be really good and they are really good for beginners because it gives people who don't really have a background in you know, moving or exercising, a way to, like, start really activating the muscle groups, the different muscle groups. And even though it is in isolation, it's still you're able to start activating properly the different muscle groups. And then I would always recommend, and this is what I do a lot with my clients, is sprinkling in some of those more dynamic and functional movements before and or after, depending on the goal too, because that's also a big thing is like what's the goal here. But then sprinkling that stuff in, that way you're isolating, you're activating these muscles, but then you're starting to integrate that dynamic movement into your routine.
All right, so we have like 2 minutes left here, so I want to ask you some listener questions. First one is from Aleska Wilk. She actually has a question about this topic. Functional exercise versus normal. What is the value in both, and what is the intention of each?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so I'll start with the intention, right? Because that's kind of what we had talked about in the beginning. It's like the intention of a functional exercise is to be focusing more on the human movement and human performance, how we should be moving as humans. Whereas like machine training, or like normal training, I guess, which normal training is a little vague, but I'm going to go off and imagine she's thinking like normal machine training is going to be more for the isolation. And there is totally value in both. And there's really value in all different types of training. There's really, I think one of the best quotes I've heard from a strength and conditioning coach is, there's never a wrong exercise. There's only a wrongly prescribed exercise. So, if somebody has back issues and has injuries, you know, certain functional movements might not be good for them, but some isolation would be good. And then vice versa, where some isolation might not be good for them and the more dynamic functional would be good for them. So.
All right, so now our next question comes from April. It's a two-part question. You know, which fruits should she avoid for high sugar during dieting? And she also wants to know, like, what are the best foods to eat to increase metabolism?
Yeah, that's actually a really, really good question. As far as fruits go, the big thing, especially even fruits and vegetables, is looking into the glycemic index of these fruits and even some vegetables. So certain fruits are going to have a higher glycemic index, which basically means
fruits are like that.
So that have a higher glycemic
index.
Yeah. That's going to be like your apples, bananas have a higher glycemic index, pineapple. So a lot of the fruits that are like sweeter, the sweeter fruits tend to have a higher.
The sweeter fruits are the worst.
Yeah, yeah.
I hate to say that because I love my Swedes,
yeah,
but
yeah, but I would like to. What I would like to recommend to April is what fruits she can take advantage of. Right, so like berries, blackberries, raspberries, strawberries, blueberries have a much lower glycemic index and are better for when somebody's just focusing on dieting. Melons, so like honeydew melons, cantaloupe, watermelons. Okay as well. Those are really good as well for having a lower glycemic index.
Avocado, what about foods which is actually to, a fruit. What about the foods to increase metabolism? Where we only have a few minutes left here.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, that's a really good question as well. That's kind of that's a more loaded question because the metabolism is so complex.
It's this different is what I would for do everyone.
For April. Yeah, it's different. You know,
age groups must have a big training. Your age must have a big factor in this as well.
Oh my gosh, for sure. Yes. Yes. Age, you know, weight, different factors, lifestyle. So I would say in order to start increasing your metabolism, start strength training, start just focusing on cleaning up your nutrition and eating more whole foods. And start there where you're going to start burning more calories regularly. So your body's going to need calories to fuel it. So it's naturally going to increase.
All right. One more quick question and then we got to go. Tyler All right. wants to know, should he eat before or after his workouts?
Yeah, that's a really good question. You know, this is another one of those questions that's like a loaded, but what I would recommend is post-workout meals are going to be, I would consider, a bit more important because when you're exercising, number one, you're burning calories. If you're strength training, you're going to be breaking down muscle, and your muscle needs to be repaired, and you need to replenish calories after exercising. So, you know, getting a good source of carbohydrates, high protein after a workout is going to be best, and particularly in that 1 to 2 hour window after your exercise.
Jake, thank you so much for joining us this morning on Good Morning New Hampshire. As always, some very good information, and I will put your information if people want to get in touch with you on our website. So thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Corey. Have an awesome day.
Have a great day. Thank you.